When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
You're listening to this week's excerpt from the Dear Prudence podcast. To get the full-length members-only version every week, join Slate Plus at slate.com/prudypod.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence. Dear Prudy, do you think that I should contact him again?
Help.
Thanks. Thank you.
Welcome back to the Dear Prudence Show. I, as always, am Dear Prudence, also known as Mallory Ortberg, and I'm excited for you to take this journey with me yet again. We have a great guest in the studio today that I'm going to get to in just a minute. But first, I want to talk about a couple of great letters I've gotten this week. These letters have been impassioned. These letters have been strident. These letters have been strongly worded. These letters have been about cots. Readers of the column might remember that last week we got a letter from a woman who had lent a cot to a good friend of hers. It was built by, I believe, her late grandfather. It was a bit of a family heirloom. She had agreed with her beforehand, you know, after your son outgrows the cot, you'll give it back. So far, so good. But then, unfortunately, this friend's son died tragically, very young. She belongs to a religious tradition that usually after someone dies, their possessions are burned to sort of mark their passing and to honor their life and death. And the letter writer is worried the cot will be among those possessions and wanted to know, you know, this has a lot of sentimental value. Is there a way that I can ask for it back? And, oh, man, I thought about that one for a while. And I just kept thinking, how would I advise her to phrase that question in a way that did not add to this woman's suffering and grief? And I couldn't come up with one. So I had to come down to on the side of, I don't think you can ask for it back. I feel for you. I understand that people feel really strongly about family heirlooms. But I think even if you lend something out to someone with the understanding that they will give it back, you know, if their child dies, that kind of supersedes the emotional claim that you have on that item, like in a way that belongs to her and her family now more than it did to you. And I just don't know how you can say to a woman who's just lost her child, I really want this bed back, if it's important to her to do that. I feel pretty solidly about this one, but I got like four letters, several of which were in all caps that were just like, fuck everything, get that bed. And I just found it kind of remarkable. And I would love, none of those people, unfortunately, were able to suggest how you would go about doing it. They just said she should. So if someone can provide me with language that you think would be supportive, loving, appropriately respectful of the grief and loss and horror that comes with losing your young child, send it in. I'll take a look at it. And if it seems workable, I will update my answer. But I just don't think that such a script exists. I think sometimes in life, you have to let possessions fall a little bit below people. And this is probably one of those cases. But I welcome your input. That's all. I don't even know how to transition out of that one. That one just feels like such a no-brainer to me that I don't have a great segue. But I'm going to do it anyways. We've got a guest in the studio this week, Saladin Ahmed. Hello. You are calling from Michigan. How are you?
I am good. How are you doing?
I am fantastic. I'm so excited to have you on the show.
Yay.
You and I feel like, have been pals from the internet for a long time,
yes.
But only met this... Was it last year?
I guess it was... it was early this year, I think. I think it was like...
Early this year.
Early part of this year, before it got warm and then stopped being warm.
Well, I feel like I've known you for 100 years, so... You know, take that as you will. But you and I had such a fabulous time at a conference where we skipped out on several occasions to go to Chili's and McDonald's and basically just drive around eating garbage, feeling like dirtbags.
That it was very
I kind
school.
Of knew.
It was nice.
Yes, I knew. Yeah, we're going to get out of this town, man. My mom doesn't understand me. And I knew I was going to have to get you on the show because I felt like when we were sitting in that Chili's, we were sort of solving the world's problems already.
Yes.
And now you're here helping me do that.
And happy to be.
I got a fabulous email from you last night berating me for the questions that I sent you.
Yeah, I wondered whether these were sort of just representative or if you kind of pick out these particular kind of horrible trends, but I guess we'll get to that.
I honestly was not trying to give you like the heaviest, most divorce-related questions, I promise. But it happened. Some weeks are just really heavy. There's no questions that are like fun about like a, I don't know, like a mysterious goat that turns into a wizard. I never get questions like that, unfortunately. So
no, I totally have to adopt a persona and send you a question about a mysterious goat.
I wish that you would, frankly. I mean, you know, you write like sci-fi and speculative fic. Like, I feel like you are uniquely situated to write to me about an enchanted goat. But in the meantime, we have no goats. We have no wizards. We have no magic. We have only financial dilemmas and heartbreak.
Mm.
You want to start tackling them?
Yeah, let's do it. We can handle this.
Fabulous. All right. I'm going to go ahead and read our first letter, which is just titled Financial Dilemma. I have decided to leave my partner of 13 years. The issue is that she earns three times as much as me. We're great with money, saving up to 65% of our take-home income. I would like to wait another 6 months to tell her I am leaving due to a certain savings goal we will achieve at that time. It would take me years to save that much on my own, and we will be splitting the savings. Is it unethical of me to keep my decision a secret for financial gain? If it matters, I'm not leaving because of any duress, but rather a death of passion and curiosity. I'm not interested in spending the rest of my life in front of a TV every night not talking. Woo! This is bracing. This is like an espresso shot.
Wow. Do you start or do I?
When you ask that question, that means I'll start, because that makes me think that I don't want to throw you in before you've been able to marshal your thoughts.
No, I have thoughts.
Hit me with them.
Yeah. I think so. The first sentence, or somewhere around the first sentence there, was I have decided to leave my partner, right? It's not I'm thinking about this. I'm not sure. There's doubt. This person writing in has made a decision, you know?
Right.
And at that point, I get it. Splitting up is scary, you know, thinking about, there are probably lots of people who will hear that letter and just be like, oh, what an awful person for even thinking about that. And no, you have to think about your economic security. You have to think about kind of, being able to live on your own. But, you know, it doesn't sound like this is a situation where there's a threat of poverty. It sounds like this is about, you know, kind of inconvenience for a little while.
Right.
Maybe not hitting exact savings goals that you have. But that's, to me, not enough to justify just living in deception with someone for 6 months. And,
right. If it were a question of, like, I wouldn't be able to find a place to live without this money, that might be a different question. But it doesn't
seem
that way.
Yeah, and people make decisions. I mean, you know, it's a scary thing, you know? It's not horrible to think about the pragmatic realities, but if you can afford to live on your own, even with slightly decreased circumstances, for that brief while, you owe it to that person and to yourself, because it'll also just poison you kind of trying to hide that and have that just, you know, in you, for that next 6 months as you're living with this person pretending to be their partner.
Right, right. It is really interesting. One thing I think I've learned from this column that I don't know that I realized beforehand was how often divorce for people is really financially ruinous. How much of the stress from divorce comes from just the nightmare of separating out your money and paying lawyers and, like, you know, people using money kind of as a weapon, and the ways in which it can just, like, tank your savings.
Absolutely. And that's why I say, you know, I don't fault this person for thinking about that. But again, I didn't get from the text, at least, a sense of economic panic, or I don't know where, if I'll be able to have a home for my kids or something like that. Right. Got sort of, I want to hit this savings goal, which I understand, but, I think that might be something you have to just kind of give yourself 6 months where you're not going to do that because you're
right.
living your true life that you really want to live, you know?
Right. The line that sticks out to me is it would take me years to save that much on my own. But that also means, like, you could save that much on your own.
Yeah.
Like, it would take a longer time, but it's not decades. It's not never. If you're not going to be ruined by leaving this relationship, I think it will be better for your partner, who, even if you don't love them anymore, I think, like, this is something you can do for them that would not mean, like, if 6 months from now you said, I'm leaving and I've been wanting to for a while, or they started to realize, like, wow, looking back, like, the last 6 months, you were really checked out. That would be maybe really painful for them to think, like, oh, you just wanted to stick around for the savings.
And if somebody gets a sense that you're kind of making these plans, then they go into kind of, you know, planning mode.
Retribution
adversarial
mode.
I mean, it's just a bad scene generally.
Right. I'm curious because they say that this is their partner. So I'm wondering if they're maybe not, like, married, and there's kind of a question of, if I leave, when I leave, I don't know how we're going to divide our assets. And that's maybe difficult. I don't know if you have legal representation or somebody who can kind of help you look out for your own financial interests. You know, even if you weren't married, like, you should, you know, find out as much as you can about a division of assets when you guys end this relationship. But yeah, I think if you're not interested in spending the rest of your life in front of a TV every night not talking, and I'm going to go ahead and assume that you have done, like, your due diligence in trying to repair the relationship. I'm not going to tell you, like, have you considered going to couples counseling or try harder?
They said,
like, you
13 sound years, so
yeah, you sound done. I'll take you at your word for that. And I think the best thing you can do for both of you guys is just end it now. Because even 6 months of spending every night in front of the TV not talking sounds, well, actually, that kind of sounds awesome. But if you don't like it, then you shouldn't do it.
I mean, yeah. And you'll feel so much happier once you make that decision and put it out there.
Right, right. And actually, I guess the best thing would be sitting in front of the TV every night and talking. I am an inveterate TV talker, which I realize alienates me from a huge subset of the population.
Now, see, we haven't watched TV together. That's something we need to do together because I am also
We're absolutely going to. And yes. I've got it under control now. I understand if I'm with people who don't like to talk during movies or TV. Like, I'm not a monster. I can shut my mouth. But the thing that brings me the greatest joy is to watch TV and hold a conversation at the exact same time, unless it's something that I, like, really need to focus on. Like, an episode of The Simpsons I've seen 100 times before, then it's pure silence. All right, so leave your partner, end it now, you know, start your own savings account and, you know, go out and do all the stuff that you've been wanting to do the last 13 years that you haven't because you guys have been sitting in front of the TV.
And it'll be scary, but it'll be awesome.
Can I also make a plug for something? I'm just realizing
it's
right
your
now.
Show. It's not up to me.
Thank you. Thank you for your permission. I feel like I sometimes get these questions from people, and, like, maybe before you're at the point where you leave your partner, if somebody's doing something all the time that you just hate, like, you don't have to do it too. Like, if you're married to someone and you're just in, like, a huge friggin' rut or in a partnership and all they want to do is watch TV, like, if you need to, you can just say, hey, I'm going to go out. Like, go out. Don't just default to the lowest common denominator because it's what they want to do. Like, it is okay to, like, say, you seem really happy sitting at home watching TV tonight. Cool. I'm going to go out. If nothing else, that will make you slightly miserable when you do leave them. I don't know. I think it's sometimes great to remember you don't have to just sit at home every night if the person who lives with you does that.
No, not just because of that.
I mean, again, please don't mistake me. I love TV, but you don't have to watch it.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and
6-1 since that matters.
And what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble. With exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
All right. This one makes me furious. I just want to warn you right now. You're going to have to hold me back. The subject line of this one is just, I'm tired. I have a lovely partner who I've been with for the last 6 years. Overall, things are great, but one problem persists. He likes to wake me up when I'm sleeping. Usually this happens when he gets home from a late shift, and he thinks it's cute to kiss me awake and ask about my day when I'm in a deep sleep. Or he will fall asleep on the couch watching TV, only to come up to bed and wake me with a question like, "Why did you leave me downstairs?" Once he wakes me up, I have a really hard time falling asleep, whereas he can fall asleep anywhere instantly and is impossible to wake up. I've asked him many times to stop, but he seems to think it is cute and/or harmless, but it drives me crazy. What else can I do to drive my point home? He's a very empathetic guy normally. How can I phrase my request so that he might empathize? I think you should kill him. I'm sorry. I feel so strongly about not waking somebody up, especially when they've told you repeatedly not to do it. Like, it just, do you know what I mean? Like, when somebody wakes you up and you're not ready, it just awakens like the animal part of your brain. It's like, something is trying to keep me from sleep and I will do anything to get back.
Yeah, no, I believe me. I feel you. Hey, I had twins. My children awaken that instinct in me. So I don't even know how to approach this question because I don't know the mentality of this. It's a he, right? That's doing this. That's waking this person
right.
up. Yes.
Right.
I don't understand the mentality that he has. That once they've asked once, twice, then don't wake them up. So I don't know how you get through to a person who still does that. And I almost don't believe. When this person says he's a really empathetic guy normally, why this one thing?
Yeah, I can, to a certain extent, like, I understand there have definitely been times in relationships when I thought I was doing something really funny and eventually the person I was seeing had to say, it actually really bothers me and I want you to knock it off.
Yeah.
But the idea of doing it repeatedly after that, especially about something like... as important as sleep. I love sleep.
Exactly.
I don't think you should murder him. I need to stop advising people to commit murder on this podcast.
No, I mean, that's literal torture, though. I mean, I don't know. This instance is, but an exaggerated version of this is like, you know, what they do to people they detain, right? It's like you can't sleep when you need to sleep and want to sleep. I'm going to wake you up.
So
there's something deep in you that messes with, I think. And
right.
you are not wrong to have a violent reaction to that, I think.
So I think there's kind of two things that I would advise this person to do, none of which involve murder. And I want to hear if you think that this makes sense or seems reasonable. One of which is, you know, you want to try to have this conversation when you're both awake because, like, when you're getting woken up in the middle of the night, like, you react really reflexively. You might be really angry. You might say things that aren't helpful just because you're so upset. And I think it's a really good idea to have this conversation during the daytime. And to phrase it as a question, like, can you help me with this? Like, you wake me up a lot. And I've told you when you do that, it's hard for me to fall back asleep. It's irritating, it's painful, it's bewildering. I don't like it. It ruins my sleep for the rest of the night. I'm tired the next day, and I've asked you repeatedly to stop. When I tell you all of this and you still do it, I don't understand. Can you explain to me what you're getting out of this, that you would repeatedly wake me up when I have asked you not to, knowing that it's going to like make the next day really difficult for me? Like, can you help me understand why? And you know, I don't have enormously high hopes for that conversation, but really, like, let him sit in that discomfort and kind of try to say, like, let him try to think through, like, wow, what am I getting out of this? Why am I, like, on some kind of sadistic level enjoying, like, distressing you and pretending that it's cute when I know that it's not? And depending on how that goes, like, you might be able to have a meaningful conversation, depending on, like, his answer might not be great. It might be, oh, it's not that big a deal. You're exaggerating. You're overreacting. I think you need to assume that as long as he's not going to stop, you need to set a really firm boundary. So it might be something like, I've asked you not to do it. I want you not to do it. If you do it again, I'm going to leave the house and sleep somewhere else. And I'm going to do that until I can trust you to act like an adult and let me sleep. And I know that that's kind of drastic, but I also think, like, if he doesn't respond to questions, if he doesn't respond to requests, if you try to have that conversation, he doesn't respond well to that, like, you need to think through, like, where can I go to get a full night's sleep? And, like, maybe that will only happen have to happen a couple of times before he gets it through his head. Maybe it's going to continue to happen and you'll have to think through, like, is this a person I want to sleep with? Like, I just think, like, letting somebody sleep in peace is such a meaningful gift. Like, I can't imagine why you would take that away from them if they told you it bothers them. Yeah, like, go to a hotel if you can afford it. Go to a friend's house if you can. Go to your, like, a family, like a sister or a brother's house. Like, somebody that you know will let you sleep all night.
Yeah.
And sleep there. Because, you know,
you're
going to eventually kill him, you know, like, eventually you will be so sleep deprived that he will wake you up and without thinking, you will just, like, push him out a window.
Yeah. See, I would even just skip the asking him, stage, you know, because he's not going to have anything useful to say. I think it's, you know, just like one morning, you know, or one evening, depending on what works for you before bed or after you guys wake up, you know, change your routine. You know, if you guys usually wake up together and whatever, brush your teeth together, whatever, have breakfast, you know, change it up, get up before him, something, you know, break into his routine and sit there and, you know, look at him and be like, look, you know, I don't feel well this morning. It's because I didn't sleep last night, you know? And like you were saying, you know, just say, this is just stress how serious this is. Tell him I can't keep doing this and I'm going to sleep somewhere else if this happens again.
I was starting to think that you were going to recommend that, like, the letter writer wake their partner up, like retaliation. This is much better.
No, because
I don't think you should retaliate.
It's not the same for everybody. I mean, for me, I'm the same way. Like, my sleep can be fucked up very easily. Am I allowed to curse?
Yeah, go for it.
My sleep can be messed up very easily. And I, you know, but not everybody's like that. You know, I've certainly had partners where, like, you know, they just go right back to sleep and no big deal. You know what I'm saying? And so it might not hit this guy.
Right. But that's what's so frustrating about this is, like, the letter writer says, like, I've told him that I don't like this. I've told him that I have trouble falling back asleep. Like, this is not like, oh, he's laboring under, like, a false impression. He knows that the letter writer doesn't like this.
Yeah. But I think there is something to be said for sort of both interrupting your normal routine and really stressing this, as you're saying, when you're awake, rather than just kind of saying, hey, don't do this when you're sleeping. And like you're saying, just making clear that there are going to be consequences. Of course, the thing is, you know, the letter writer has to be clear whether in their mind, how far they're going to go. You know, is this somebody that you care so much about and that you're so into that, you know, you're going to keep putting up with this, you know? Or not. And you got to kind of, that's really what's at the core.
And I think,
so you got to sort that out, you know?
Yeah. I think even more than calling this a consequence, because I think one trap that you want to try to avoid, and I realize this is a little hypocritical because I told you to murder him earlier, is it's not punishment, right? You're not saying, like, because you're such a shitty partner, I'm going to punish you by withdrawing. What you're doing is stating a need. And the need is uninterrupted night.
No, to me,
sleep.
Yeah, but to me, I don't mean, when I say consequence, I don't mean necessarily punitive. I just mean the result.
Oh, for sure.
You know,
right. I'm just kind of thinking through how this conversation could possibly go a bit wrong, and trying to anticipate that. So just, like, make it really clear. I'm not doing this to get back at you. I'm not doing this because I want to hurt you. I'm doing this because it seems like this is the only way that I can get a full night's sleep.
Exactly.
I would love to do that in our bed with you.
Yeah.
It seems like that's not possible right now. So until it is, I'm going to sleep somewhere else. And, you know, if his response to that is to kind of get it together and knock it off, great. You guys can kind of have some more conversation about your dynamic and move on. And if he doesn't, I got to say, this kind of feels like a deal breaker to me. It sounds like it happens a lot.
Exactly.
This is not like a little thing. This is like,
no,
I need my sleep.
Every night.
And if you can't
let
me do
that. It's your brain.
Ugh. Yeah. Sleep is such a need. It's like breathing and eating. Like you can't go without it. Especially when it's just to talk about your day. My day is over. It's night now. Don't ask me about my day. The day already happened.
You're not valuing the other person's health. You know what I'm saying? That's a pretty big effing thing, you know?
Right. Yeah. Oh, I wasn't expecting to spend like this much time on this letter, but it's just really, I'm angry just like secondhand imagining someone doing that to me. We would be broken up. It would be over if it happened times. Oh, yeah. It would be done.
Save big money when you start your next project today at Menards. Check out our great selection of garage and utility lighting options in stock, ready to take home today. We carry everything to help you illuminate whatever project you're working on. Shop garage and utility lighting products in store at your nearest Menards. You can also view all of our entire selection of lighting options today on Menards.com. Save big money at Menards.
All right, this one, nice and easy. This next letter is just about someone who discovered their husband betrayed them after he died. You want to read this one?
Sure. The subject is Better to Know. I thought my husband and I were doing better in our marriage before he died. Therapy seemed to be working. He was more attentive and we were closer than we had been in a decade. His death devastated me, more so when I found a secret cell phone among his personal effects. My husband had been having a year-long affair with a dear friend. She was married and begging him to leave me while we were in marriage counseling. My husband was trying to break it off when he died. I haven't told anyone. I want to weep, to rage, to stop grieving for a life that was a lie. My quote-unquote friend came to the funeral in tears and hugged me. I found out that she and her husband are trying to have a baby now. I can't stand the thought that she gets to waltz away without a care. Her husband is a decent man and deserves to know exactly what kind of person he is married to. I wish I knew the truth before my husband died. At least then my heart wouldn't be twisted like this. Should I tell him? Or am I spreading my pain around? I don't know what to do.
It's been a while since a letter just produced a big gut groan out of me, and this one got it. This is awful. This is the worst. This is not one of those situations where I feel like I can say, oh, but you like still had a really good last year together and that was meaningful. No, this is just the worst. It was based on a lie. Like your reaction makes a lot of sense to me. This is horrifying. Like this is twin betrayals and now your husband is dead and you can't fight with him about it. I cannot imagine that type of like impotence and rage and desolation.
Well, okay, I'll give a slightly differing opinion.
Yes, give me. Let's fight.
Which is this? And a lot of people cheat. A lot of people have cheated, and in every instance that it's happened, in every marriage that it's happened, in every relationship that it's happened, it has not invalidated everything else that has been in the relationship, right? And so maybe it was very real, this kind of increasing reconciliation between them and this increasing closeness between them. And I'm sure that there are real memories there and, that they had some very beautiful things together. And I don't think that you have to feel like it's, there's a lot of conflicting feelings when someone dies. And I don't think you have to feel like you're not allowed to remember that, or you're not allowed to kind of honor that.
Right.
But, she has a specific question about, you know, and it does sound, I'm sorry, I'm assuming it's a she, I don't know that, maybe I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. The letter writer has a specific question, about whether she should tell, this woman's husband, right? And what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think the one thing, thinking back to what you were just saying, is like the one thing that makes this particularly painful is it wasn't just that it was an affair. It was an affair with her best friend.
Yeah.
So that, you know, that affects so many of her interpersonal interrelationships. Like that affects her ability to trust the people close to her. That's really heavy. And I think that that's part of what makes this a little different from just he was having an affair, but in other ways, things were getting better. This
right,
is like
right,
someone
right.
I really trusted. I think I would I'm not sure if this is a firm position yet, so let me talk through this and I'll see how I feel at the end. I don't think she should tell the husband, in part because I think, like, the level of intensity you're feeling right now is so heavy that I don't know if you could say it in a way that was not, like, maximally devastating to him, right? Like, based on this letter, which just, like, you know, screams with pain, I think it would be really difficult for you to say that to him in a way that was not going to cause you both more pain further down the line. But I do think that you can and should tell your friend, right, who I think in a lot of ways, like, that's the person you need to speak to, in no small part because, like, she was asking him to, like, you know, start a marriage with her. And, you know, I don't know that you should do it right now. I think to wait until you are able to have a conversation without, like, really losing it emotionally or worried that you might do something that you would regret later. So maybe you can't do it in person. Maybe you have to write to her. And to just state really plainly without going into detail about what you think of her. Because I want you to be able to just say what you need and get out, right? Like, I don't want you to get trapped in this back and forth where you just unleash a lot of invective on her and then feel better in the moment and then later feel weighed down. But to just say, you know, I know you were having an affair with my husband. I know that you wanted him to leave me. This has, you know, it is impossible for me to continue a friendship with you. I can't see you anymore. I can't trust you. I'm not necessarily going to, like, tell anyone, but, like, if someone asks me or approaches me, I'm not going to lie. And I think that's really fair. You're not going out of your way to cause destruction, but you're also letting her know, like, now that I know what I know, I'm going to set a boundary between the two of us because I don't trust you. And I'm not going to lie for you. I'm not going to go out of my way to cause you harm, but I will not keep your secret. I will not protect you like that. And you, now that you have that information, you can decide. Maybe you'll tell your husband on your own. Maybe you won't, but that's your choice and you get to live with that.
I can't. He needs to know. I mean,
yeah. Oh, good. Yeah. Okay, hit me with it.
Hell yeah! I mean, they're about to have a baby together, right? They're trying to have a baby together, and she's saying, you know, as far as she knows, he's a decent guy. Whatever. I think that, and there is a question of justice there. I don't care if it's petty, you know, to say, as she says, that this other woman gets to just waltz off, and you know. Not only kind of having done what she's done to her best friend, but just basically spinning this lie of a life with her husband, you know, when you she's know, been th- trying to get this other guy and she should just be allowed to kind of go forward doing that. I don't know.
Right.
I mean, I think she has ever, I don't think it, but it's exactly as you say. I don't think it should be invective. I don't think it should be, I think some very plain statement of the facts via a letter, you know, I don't know about an email. Maybe it needs to be a paper letter even. But in text somehow, it doesn't have to be direct, you know, contact. I think there is the question, and this is, you know, with these letters, you don't know the contours of somebody's friendship. These could be people who, these could be two women who have been friends for 30 years and have had and gone through all sorts of things together that I'm not going to say automatically they'll never be friends. I know it sounds crazy to say that, but you don't know what dynamics people have. So, right. I mean, to me, the question of whether you want to talk to your friend first and say, look, I found out about this and whatever that means for, you know, you and her to say, if you're not going to tell your husband, I'm going to, you might do that. But you, if you feel like you need to just, you know, you don't ever want to speak to this other woman again or ever have any contact with her again, but you feel like ethically this other person, this man should know, you know, then you have every right to just not say boo to your friend, ex-friend, ever again, and to just let this other person know what's going on and then to go build, you know, what life you can now knowing everything you know. And, you know, you can build a life, you know.
No, and that's a good point, too. I forgot, you know, she says this woman was a really close friend, which presumably means she at least somewhat knows the husband, right? Like, if they have a kind of friendly relationship, I imagine, like, just as you wish someone had told you, he, you know, especially because you were, so actually, I totally agree with you. You know, you were in that situation. You knew how painful it was to find out after the fact. and you would rather know than not know. You know, you have the opportunity now to save him the pain of finding out, like,
and especially if you know that they're trying to have a family. You know, I mean,
right.
That's somebody should know that before.
Yep. And whatever they decide to do with that information, I don't think you should worry about that or try to get involved. I know there's going to be a real desire for punishment and retribution on your side. And like sometimes people, when they hear information like that, they end it. And sometimes they clam up and bury their head in the sand and they say, I don't want to think about it. Let's just move on. And I just encourage you, like, once you give them that information, to just focus on taking care of yourself. Like, you're going through so many different forms of grief right now. I know you said therapy seemed to be working when your husband was still alive. I hope you are going to therapy by yourself now because you deserve
absolutely.
It. Like, think of it as like a massage that you are getting. Like, you deserve therapy because you've been put through some uniquely painful situations. I think you're right. I think he does deserve to know, especially if they're going to be having a baby. And I would certainly want to know. Yeah, I'm really sorry. And I think, you know, because you ask, like, should I tell or am I spreading my pain around? Really try to focus on keeping it as, like, factual and non-emotional as you can. Because it sounds like a part of you is... Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
It sounds like you're kind of worried. Am I doing this out of a desire to hurt? Am I doing this to be cruel? And if that's a concern for you, I think to just focus on putting something in writing that is just, here are the facts. And that way you will be able to, like, ameliorate that concern a little bit, because you're not calling and saying, like, you're a terrible friend, you're a terrible person, your husband should know, which is stuff you might later come to regret, even if you felt it genuinely at the time. And I don't want you to have any regrets about this. I don't want you to feel like, oh God, do I owe her an apology? Like, I don't want you to ever have to apologize to this woman.
I mean, my thing is, you know, yes, it's true. You don't want to act in any way out of a desire to hurt this person or get kind of revenge. That mostly because it won't work, you know, leaving aside the ethical question. But also, you don't need to feel motivated to protect people. You know, I mean, to me, I read that also as much like, should I not be spreading my pain around? And, you know, there's no reason for all this to be on you. You're not the person who did this, you know?
Right.
I think having the truth out there is not something you should feel guilty about.
Right. No, that's a really good point. You didn't create the situation. You're not like stirring up controversy for the sake of doing so. Like, you were given information that you were not ready for. And I think let this be a reminder to everyone who's having an affair, try not to die in the middle of it, because it hurts people.
Hide your secret cell phone. I shouldn't say that.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't mean to make light of it. It's just, you know, you don't think that you'll die in the middle of doing something. And it hurts people incredibly. My friend. I wish so much that we had a question that was just like, should I have a sandwich today?
I know. That was some emotionally intense stuff there.
Yeah. Next time that you come on the show, I promise, they're all going to be just fun questions about, like, I found $1 million. Which one of my friend's student loans should I pay off first?
No, this was fun. And I never do anything, you know, advice. That's fun.
Well, my friend, thank you so much for coming and handling all these incredibly thorny issues. I hope that you find $1 million and eat a sandwich later today.
I really hope I do, too. And I hope you do, too. Thanks for having me, Mallory.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Get out of here. I want to leave you with this last bit of advice that hopefully wraps up everything that we've just tackled over the last hour and makes you feel comforted and at ease. And that is this: don't wake your partner up when they're sleeping. If you learned nothing else today, when somebody is sleeping, leave them alone. The following exceptions are acceptable if you are waking someone up from a deep sleep. They are on fire. End of list. Leave them alone. If it is a child sleeping, leave the child alone. If it is an adult sleeping, leave the adult alone. If you have a really important question you need to ask, wait until it's daytime. If you want to know how their day was, guess. You know, just sit quietly and think about what they might have done. You're smart. You can probably think of a few possibilities. And if they're only a little bit on fire, frankly, try to put it out yourself. Only wake them up if it's absolutely necessary. Just don't do that to people. The only people that I'm going to give a pass to on this are babies. You wake people up, but you don't mean to. It's just because you don't know how to tell us what you need. So you have to scream until we can guess, which, frankly, I don't think is a great system. I would love it if babies could sort of get together and reassess their technique. But I respect their process. I have a lot of respect for babies. I think they're doing the absolute best they can. They don't even have fine motor skills, and they usually don't have shoes on. So they're working, you know, with a lot of disadvantages. You know, you can't even keep your neck up, babies. Like, you're really out there living the struggle, trying to learn how to keep your neck up because you have no neck muscles yet. So you guys can keep waking people up. Everybody else, knock it off. Let people go to bed. Let them sleep. And if that's it, that's all I got. Thanks for listening to Dear Prudence. Our producer is Audrey Dilling. Our theme music was composed by Robin Hilton. Steve Lichtai is the executive producer of Slate Podcasts, and Andy Bowers is the chief content officer of Panoply. Remember, you can always hear more Prudence by joining Slate Plus. Go to slate.com/plus to sign up. If you like this show, please go to iTunes and write us a review. Reviews help new listeners find the podcast, and then they ask us questions, and the beautiful cycle continues. If you want me to answer your question, call me and leave a message at 401-371-DEAR. That's 3327. And you might hear your answer on an episode of the show. You don't have to use your real name or location. And at your request, we can even alter the sound of your voice.